This is Big Fat Marketing episode number 19, and today we're going to be talking to Catherine Toke. Now, Catherine Toke's going to be sharing with you how you can find your target market in order to better your brand and increase your business over the short term, middle term, and long term. Catherine's going to be sharing how she turned her father's company from being known as an elderly fashion brand to now being known as a youthful, fun, and colorful brand known as Supre. Check it out.
Discover the most cutting-edge business and internet marketing strategies and how to generate more traffic, leads, and sales. This is Big Fat Marketing.
Big Fat Marketing is brought to you by Social Media Worldwide. Go to www.managemyposts.com to get your 7 days free trial, where you'll get your social media managed for you so you can focus on the things that matter most and make money for your business and let Social Media Worldwide drive the traffic. Go to www.managemyposts.com. Hello, how are ya? And thank you for once again jumping on Big Fat Marketing. Now, a simple question for you. Is branding of importance to your business? Now, some people that are starting out in their business and they don't really focus on branding, which I pretty much don't blame them for doing so, because really all they want to do is get their business started, see if they can make a little bit of money, and then focus on all the nitty-gritty important stuff. Well, that's fair enough, okay? But what about for you people who are already established, who are starting to make a little bit of money in your business? Now, do you think branding is important? Do you think that you should start implementing a strategy to better your branding? Well, the person with all the answers here today is a person by the name of Catherine Toke. Now, Catherine has extensive experience in fashion branding, transformation, and strategy, hailing from an entrepreneurial family background in which her father actually founded the iconic Australian brand named Supre. Have you heard of that brand? Well, they are known as the clothing company that, you know, the youthful clothing company that you see here today that is at the forefront of the fashion retail brands. Now, Catherine joined Supre in 1997 as part of the sales and development division. Now, during that time when Catherine had joined the company, they were going through some financial hardships. The company was actually going through some tough times. And a big factor in that was the fact that the economy wasn't doing that great at the time and had a big toll on the fashion industry. But the one thing she focused on was bettering the brand, you know, and finding out what the target market is. So at the time, the target market wasn't associated with the young, youthful brand it is associated with today. And she's going to be showing you how she reinvigorated the brand and turned it into the fun, youthful, colorful brand that as you see it today. So that's her passion. That's what she loves to do. And with her passion came about the company called Think Consulting. Now, in short, Think works alongside business owners and senior executive teams to reconnect the company and reposition its brand in the marketplace. Catherine implements this by using change strategies and works alongside the business's ultimate goals. And one of the strategies she uses is based on this three core pillar system, which is building brands with purpose, building people with purpose, and the planet with purpose. So without further ado, let me introduce to you. Let's get started. Let's get her on the call right now. I've been waiting. You've probably been hanging to talk to Catherine. So here she is, Catherine Toke. Hello, Catherine Toke, and welcome to Big Fat Marketing. I'd like to thank you for taking the time in jumping on Big Fat Marketing and sharing your ideas.
Thank you. I'm excited to share my ideas.
Oh, great. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, and I'm looking forward to having a bit of a chat to you to finding a bit more about you. Now, let's get started. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, and how you got involved in the fashion industry?
Sure. So I left school in 1997, back in the day. At the time when I left school, I didn't really understand what was going on intrinsically in our family business. And I entered the business when the business was actually in voluntary administration. So I really got a first-hand understanding of how to work at the core level of a business and really building the business again from ground up. So my parents hadn't come from fashion backgrounds, you know, kind of many years ago. Dad had come to Australia as a marine engineer and as an opal miner in Cooper Pedy from Holland, and my mum was a nurse, so wasn't really exactly the fashion scape that they had come from. But I found myself, you know, fascinated by that business and spending my weekends there as a teenager. So naturally, when I left school, went straight into the business. So, yeah.
Your dad was a miner from Cooper Pedy, and your mum was a nurse. How did that come about? How did they get involved in the fashion? It's a total different industry.
Yeah, well, I realized later my grandmother, and this is only after I started to trace it a little bit more, my grandmother was a seamstress. She was making her own thing. So there was a slight connection to the fashion industry, but nothing in terms of actually an industry. There was a connection. But, yeah, Dad was in Cooperpedi, and he saw someone, this is the short version, saw someone selling T-shirts on the side of the road and asked where they came from, and they ended up in Sydney selling dresses out the back of a car in King's Cross, and you know, went from there, started printing his own dresses and driving up the east coast of Australia, selling his wares out of the back of his car, and then ended up at Flemington and Paddy's markets. And so Supre was born from there.
That's an awesome story. That's crazy. I'm sure
not without its trials and tribulations, let me tell you.
I'm sure we all have our trials and tribulations, and
part of the journey, isn't it?
Yeah, that's incredible. And just tell us a little bit about Supre and some of the hard times I was going through, because I know every business has its challenges, and like even my business has its challenges, and sometimes people like to hear the challenges and see how people overcome them. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I see the challenges as opportunities and things that we can certainly learn from. As I mentioned, when I first entered the family business in 97, we were in voluntary administration. So the administrators were in the business pulling apart the business and dissecting it and redistributing it and all sorts of different things, which, again, I didn't really know what was going on at the time. So, you know, they were certainly some of the hardest times, but we'd been in we had a business liquidated 10 years before, you know, just after I was born. So it certainly goes in cycles, and it seems to certainly go in cycles, particularly in the fashion industry. There's a lot of people who have been able to stay in business, but certainly, you know, through their fair share of challenges, and being able to overcome those challenges. You know, back then there wasn't really a structured formal strategy, as I said, as I would do it today. But it was kind of, let's try this, let's do this, how could we do this differently? You know, being creative and open to new ideas and generating new ways of doing things. So, yeah, so they were certainly some of the most challenging times, but they were certainly, for me in the family business, the most fun times. When I look back and I go, my God, how would I like to reinvigorate, or when would I like to go back to? And it would be those times, because I really thrive with finding the challenges in the business and finding the solutions in a business to overcoming those challenges.
And you mentioned the hard times before when we had a chat. I just wanted to know, was it basically because of the economical factors in place, or was it because of there was no pretty particular strategy, or both? Yeah.
A bit of both, I would say, in hindsight. A lot of fashion businesses, and our family business was no different, were not very well managed financially. We always had people involved, you know, internally and externally from a financial perspective, trying to oversee the business. And obviously when you're going through administration, you've got heavy, you've got people looking down on the business, you know, making sure where every single dollar is spent. So certainly it was the financial side of the business, and just kind of things weren't being managed properly. Everything was done in a very raw way, without a strategy and without a plan, and trying lots of different things. And looking back, that probably wasn't.
Just have a go.
Wasn't a great strategy.
The Aussie way.
Yeah.
The Aussie / Dutch way. Is that correct?
That's right.
All right, yep. Cool. All right, so and you came into the business, and you started to help out. You gave your dad a bit of ideas and put some strategies in place. Can you talk to us a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, so again, what I didn't realize over the years was, when I first went into the business, I was working in the sales and the development of the new store concept that we were rolling out, because we were going from factory outlets to boutiques in Westfields. And all the other, you know, shopping centres. So it was really about transforming the brand. And, you know, from when I first started, Supre was what we used to say as kids, a fat old ladies brand. sorry to all the Greek mamas out there that used to shop at our Marrickville warehouse. But our private school education was based on fleecy jumpers and stirruped lycra pants, as we used to say. So there were major transformations going on in the business at the time. So I was involved in the sales and the promotions, and I naturally went into the marketing and understanding our consumers and connecting through their worlds. And then, you know, finally the work that I was doing was around the brand and really connecting the brand at a deep level to the lives of the consumers through the connection through marketing. And we really built the brand and the solid brand from there through the connections to consumers. So
okay, yeah. How did that work? How did you manage to connect it with the consumers?
The first part, because we had no association with teenagers whatsoever, because we were positioned obviously with an older, much older target market, and transforming the brand to be a youth brand. We initially partnered with brands like Clean and Clear and Nivea at the time, and some other tampon brands and things that were, you know, relevant to that target market. And we, you know, basically leveraged and created marketing partnerships off the back of the relationships that we developed with them. We realized that they had the millions of teenagers in line with their brand, and how could we leverage our brand and build our brand was through the partnerships of much bigger conglomerates who'd already had that target market.
Wow, wow. And you know what?
Interestingly, a few years later, they were coming back to mm-hmm. us wanting to advertise, and we certainly sold them advertising through our stores and set up a media platform in our stores that they were now knocking on our door to connect to our consumers, which originally were their consumers.
So it's a bit like a joint venture.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Because the thing that, I mean, what's interesting what you mentioned about target market, when we actually teach people this step one when we teach people about, you know, internet marketing, is we ask them, you know, who is your target market? You know, write down that your target market. If you were to write an email to your target market, if you were to write an email to one person, what would that person look like? I mean, how many kids would that kids would that person have? Does that person have kids or not? Mm-hmm. Does that person wear glasses? Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, we're actually really nailing down the details. And you managed to do that through finding out that your strong target market was a particular age group. And what was the age group again?
Yeah. Well, we were at the time really focused on 14 to 18-year-olds, because there weren't many other brands doing anything in that space, and we really were able to own the teenage target market. But it wasn't, you know, 5 years later of ploughing at that, you know, the competitors were certainly lining up in that space, and now you've only got to look at that market and there's, you know, another 20 competitors in that space in the retail environment, not to mention the hundreds of online retailers targeting teenagers. So
yeah,
it was the right time for it.
Okay, great. And okay, I want to talk a bit about branding.
Yep.
Okay, and I know that's your strong suit. You're actually mm-hmm. all about branding.
My Can love,
you
tell me? Yes.
Yeah, it's your love, is it? Okay. So how important is branding in business? Because let me just quickly talk a bit about like what our challenges are in mm-hmm. internet marketing is mm-hmm. we always brand ourselves as being the expert. It's basically Ray Canoon, or the person I work with closely, Stephen Esser. It's not the company. It's basically we are the brand. So I want you to talk about how important branding is in business.
Well, I guess it's, you know, the same philosophies of building a personal brand and then building a personal brand within a business. For me, in the Supre days, I really built a personal brand within the business. I never saw it in mm-hmm. that way, but the brand became a lot of me. And, you know, when we did things wrong, I'd have the media call me and go, "Kath, this isn't mm-hmm. what you're about." And I said, "I know, but you know, it's still, even though I think because I was leading the brand and as brand manager, and when things didn't quite fit, I felt like it was a personal reflection on me because there was so much personal brand within the business, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So yeah, business, you know, having the brand for me is a really important part. It really is the backbone of the business. And you know, the brand is really beyond the physical attributes of the brand and the branding, and it's really about the connection and the depth of connection to consumers that really helps to build a brand. And it builds the emotional connection, and it's about the relationships, and it's about, you know, all those other things that we probably, you know, and also where businesses have come from, they haven't seen that as such an important factor. But when I, you know, looked back and I went to see one of the administrators who was involved in the recent sale of the Supre business, and I said, "What would you highlight as the key point of what was missing in the brand before it was sold?" And he said, "Brand." The brand had lost its way. You know, he was an administrator. He's a financial guy. But I, you know, I really remember those words, because for him to say that it was the brand that had lost its way and the brand that didn't have the connection to its consumers anymore, you know, was a fundamental learning for me. So brand is ingrained in everything. It's ingrained in the culture. It's ingrained in the people. It's ingrained in the way that you operate, the way that you show up, the way that you do everything.
Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes when starting a business, Catherine, it could be the first thing people think about and it can be the last thing people think about. Which way should people go when getting started? Should it be the first thing or the last thing they think about when getting started?
I guess it's about the core values and the mission and the vision to start with, and then how that leads into a brand. And for me, it's all about building a brand with purpose. And I think I may have mentioned this to you when I looked at the family business and I looked at where it went wrong over the last couple of years and where we certainly hit financial challenges. And after we'd built it into a really successful brand, and a brand that had purpose, and we're working with the Department of Education, empowering young women through education programs and healthy body, healthy mind, and focused on body image and, you know, self-worth and self-confidence and adding lots of value to people's lives through the brand. And when we started to pull all of those things out because they didn't align from a business perspective, or the senior executives thought that they didn't align to the profitability of the business, was the day that we started to lose the business.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everyone can compete on price and product. You cannot compete on sustaining a really credible, valuable, trustworthy brand.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just take Apple, for example. You know, they're not the cheapest. They're not the most inexpensive products, but, you know, they've got a strong brand, and when I think of Apple, I think of reliability. I think of not crashing. I think of quality, and that's what comes to mind when I think of Apple. And they're certainly not the cheapest products out there. So,
and you cannot, you know, for the rest of, you know, your business life, just be competing on price. It's not a sustainable business model. And I've learned that firsthand.
Yeah. Sometimes people use that business model to get started. They just undercut everyone, but it's not. Yeah, you're right. It's not sustainable. Doesn't keep on going.
Yeah.
All right, Catherine, that's awesome. So now you have turned around businesses, started like new businesses, helped other businesses. What are the top three things that someone should know in order to be successful in branding their business?
It's a great question. So for me, one of the things that I really look at now is how to actually think like a startup. Even if you're not a startup, you might be in a mature stage of your business. You might be in year 6, you might be in year 8, you might be in year 20. But really kind of taking on a startup mentality and really ingraining that brand from the get-go, as I said, in the values, in the mission, in the vision, and really nurturing those things to really build a strong brand. As I mentioned earlier, building a brand with purpose, a brand that has meaning, a brand that actually does good things, that it has a soul behind it, that it's actually got a depth, it's got a character, and it's got more to it than just selling a price and a product. And the last thing that I would say would be about empowering the people of the business. The people are your brand. They are your brand ambassadors. They're your living and breathing, walking brand ambassadors. So really empowering them with the brand culture to really leverage the brand. You know, if you can't afford to spend money on advertising, you've got to really look at the assets of the business. And one of our biggest assets of a business is our people. They become the brand ambassadors, and making sure that the brand is actually ingrained in those people.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. And can you provide some real life examples of other people who have followed your advice? Have you got any of those real life stories?
I do have lots of real life stories beyond the world of Supra, and I've certainly worked in a lot of businesses where we've done lots of transformation and turnaround, which I can't declare which brands they are just because of confidentiality and not wanting to really declare, for them not really wanting to declare that they've been in a troubled situation and that they've needed turnaround. But I've certainly worked with a number of individuals, from an executive coaching level that, you know, in terms of transformation, and really helping them to think about their life differently and how that then changes how they show up to work and their family and their business and all sorts of things, because I really do take a holistic approach. It's not just about business, because as we know, our lives are so blurred between life and work. And as Generation Y says, what's this work-life balance concept? It's all just life, because we spend 90% of our time working.
That's
it's
true.
Not, you know, it's not a big difference. So, yeah, there's been, you know, lots of real-life examples, as I said, whether it's through executive coaching or coaching that I do with teenagers through a program that I've written called Discover Your Purpose. But for me, it's really about creating holistic and sustainable business models, and it's sustainable life models as well, because, you know, I was sick 2 weeks ago and you absolutely cannot do anything. So there's no work, there's no play, there's no exercise, there's no anything if you're sick. So if you just really, you know, go full out and work your ass off and burn yourself out, which I obviously did, you're no good to anyone. So it really is about taking a holistic approach to business and to life.
Yeah. And what are some ways around that? What are some ways around that where you basically, you, instead of, because sometimes I do that as well, I actually work until 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, doing work, you know, always catching up on things that I didn't do during the day. Or sometimes, what is it, leveraging yourself? Is it basically using other people's expertise? Mm-hmm. What are some of the ways which you actually implement in businesses in order to actually overcome that?
Okay. So one tool that I use is the 5 a.m. club. I get up at 5 o'clock. I go to bed quite early so that I can get up at 5 o'clock every day to be able to get the best hours. I feel like the best hours of my day are done between 5 and 7 o'clock before my kids get up. So I really focus on those hours and planning out every hour of the day, and making sure that I'm getting the most done and not leaving it to chance to get things done. I do a weekly plan on a Sunday night of what needs to happen for the entire week across every facet of my life, not only my business but my health and, you know, cooking and all those different things, the time, quality time with my kids, and making sure that everything has a time and a plan, except the weekends. We don't, there's no plan on the weekends. So
you have weekends off?
Weekends off.
Oh, lucky you.
An important part of the, R&R, and, you know, the quality time with kids is for me an incredibly important part. So yes, business gets put aside on the weekends.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. I mean, look, the thing with business is, and I say, here are some of the points I think why people fail. First, they're not focused. Second, they spread themselves too thin. They're doing all the work themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and they're failing to, mm-hmm. failing
delegation
to, you know,
is key.
Give other people to do. Yeah, delegation exactly is key. And third thing is they give themselves a job again. Because why did you get into business in the first place? You know, you got to get into business because you want a better lifestyle and you want to be able to help others. You really believe in what you do, not really want to give yourself a job again. Would you agree with that?
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something I'm working on.
Yeah, and you know what? It's a constant work in progress. You know, you never really kind of nail it because there's always things going on. But yeah, it is. Yeah, a constant work in progress.
I'm getting a little bit off topic here, Catherine, but since I've got you on this call, I might as well bring it to your attention. What do you think about hiring people overseas, like outsourcing, using places like Elance, Odesk? What do you think about those?
I use them all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've got a virtual assistant in the Philippines.
Oh, great.
I use Odesk, and I've got a great graphic designer that I work with in Thailand. Mm-hmm. She builds all of my PowerPoint presentations and any graphical artworks that I need. So I certainly do use it as a resource. I've also got interns through a local university here in Sydney that I utilize, because I also want to empower them and also bring
their
skills into my business. So I certainly am not concerned. You know, I think it's a great strategy in terms of outsourcing to build your business. You absolutely cannot do everything yourself.
Yeah.
And if you do, you know, we know the ramifications of it. And it's actually not a good strategy. You know, fundamentally, we can't – and I've recently learned this thing called about the power quadrant, and the four parts are red, white, yellow, and gray. Red, white, yellow, and blue. And it's on my, have a look on my website. It's on there, and it really helps you to understand which part that you actually fall into and identify that you can't actually do your every project to its full capacity yourself, that you do need to outsource, you do need to delegate, and utilizing other people's skills to build that project.
That's great. What's it called? The Power Quadrant, did you say?
The Power Quadrant.
And where did you say that it was? On your website?
Yeah, it's on my blog. So, katherinetoke.com.au.
Okay. katherinetoke.com.au. Can you spell that out, please? Because I know I was sure. Struggling with your last name at first. I was trying to say Tauki or
C A T H E R I N E and then Toke. TAOUK.com.au.
Fantastic. I'll make sure I put it on the blog as well, my blog, so people can get
it. Yeah, it's a great tool, the quadrant.
So the power quadrant, the power quadrant. Okay, so that's fantastic. All right, so that's really cool. I'm going to go there and give that a go as well. So I'm really actually fascinated that you're using university students, giving them up an opportunity as well. A lot of people tend to go outside Australia, I mean, especially with the internet marketing world, but you are using university students. That's really, really cool. I really like that idea.
And there's some amazing internship programs that you can offer young people. I have a girl who's with me a couple of days a week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over the years I've had different people come in at different times, and, you know, it's really opened up to not only for me as a resource but also for them as a learning environment and being able to teach the skills that I can to them.
That's fantastic. And the more you teach, the better you get at things, at doing things.
100%.
As well. Yeah.
And we have so much to learn from them, let me tell you. They're straight out of university.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got a different head on them. They're a different generation. We've got a lot to learn from younger generations.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, Katherine, so if there was one secret you had to give about branding, what would that be?
I think I've mentioned it as well before, but it's really about, and the secret I identified was when I, which I spoke to you about before, about when Super A had purpose compared to when it didn't have purpose as a brand. Mm-hmm. And that would certainly be my secret. Build a brand with purpose, and it will outlive you as a personal brand. The company will outlive you, you know. So for me, it would really be about ingraining purpose and meaning into the brand and growing it from there.
That's awesome. And what are some of the common problems that people experience in actually building a brand?
Yeah, I guess it's, you know, brand versus advertising or brand versus marketing. They're all quite different things. Mm-hmm. And I think they often get blurred into one space.
Yep.
So I feel that that's a common problem, because people go, I don't have any money to spend on advertising. I don't have money to spend on marketing. You don't have to spend, you know, you can get a lot of things done. When I first started at Super A, we were in voluntary administration. So we had no money to do anything. So we had to do everything for nothing. So there are, you know, ways that you can really leverage and grow a brand through creative initiatives. So just don't get, in terms of that problem, don't get stuck that I can't afford advertising or can't afford to build a brand or I can't afford to, because there's interesting ways that you can actually do that. What else is there? Really kind of, you know, understanding the market. Mm-hmm. And again, people getting trapped in, I can't afford market research. If you can't afford market research, you can't afford to be in business, really. And you can do market research for $0 by just, you know, doing something like a SurveyMonkey and getting it out to as many of your target market as possible and really gaining all that feedback, or, you know, sending it out via, you know, a third-party mailing list or something who's got your target market.
Yeah.
And really understanding what your market is about, because the platform then your business needs to be based on the findings of that market research and really delivering what people want, not necessarily what you make or what you offer. It really needs to be about what people want.
Yeah, SurveyMonkey is a great tool, and you use social media these days to get, you know,
getting it out there
and getting some feedback about your, because exactly what you said, it's not about what your customer or what you want, it's about what they want. Mm. Yeah, great, yeah. Great point.
And so many businesses make that mistake of really building a brand around what they sell or what they produce or what they, you know, like.
Yeah.
But does anyone else like it?
Yeah, well, we actually, the thing is, Katherine, I mean, this is a good example, and we actually ran Big Fat Marketing about 3 years ago. I call it Big Fat Marketing Season 1. And we had about 50 episodes on there. We did it live on a webinar, on a GoToWebinar. And what we used to do, we used to ramble on about the start, you know. And we used to just ramble on about crap. You know, we used to talk about applications and people weren't interested in that. So we ran a survey and said, what do you think about Big Fat Marketing and what are some of the things that you change? And then most people said, you guys ramble on too much at the start.
Great to get feedback. It's hard sometimes to take it, but it's good.
Absolutely. Now I just get constructive criticism. Yeah, exactly. Constructive criticism. Now what we do, we just start the show and get on with the information. Because the reality is people haven't got much time on their hands these days. They just want to get to the juice and start applying it. All right, Catherine, you have been awesome. Now I wanted to talk to you about a little bit about your consulting company as well. You mentioned to me earlier, you started a consulting company called Think, okay? Can you tell me a bit about Think and how that business came, how the idea came about?
Sure. Well, after I left the family business a couple of years ago, I went out and started doing business consulting and coaching. And so it really formed from there. And it was about helping and supporting businesses going through transformation or change or challenges in their businesses and really being able to identify those challenges in their business and how do you actually convert them into opportunities. Mm-hmm. So for me, it is about supporting businesses through those changing times and putting, you know, helping businesses to really identify what the future is. And, you know, we work on exit strategies, you know, even if it might not be an exit strategy to leave the business, but it's, you know, a plan ahead for the next 5 years. And then we break it down into, well, what's going to happen in the next 4 years, 3 years, 2 years, year, you know, but what's really got to happen is what's going to happen in the next 90 days. And we really break it down into bite-sized chunks to help businesses achieve their long-term goals as well as their short-term goals that they're happening cohesively. So
that's great. That's really cool. And have you had much success in doing that?
Yeah, my God, I've been loving it. You know, for me, the conversations that I get to have with a breadth of different clientele, you know, beyond the fashion industry, because the foundations were certainly around fashion because that's my background, but, you know, it certainly stemmed into other areas of media and other entertainment businesses and health and, you know, fitness and all sorts of different kinds of companies. At the end of the day, they're all things that I love. You know, I do like to work on businesses that I have a natural passion for. I don't think I'll ever work for an engineering company or a mining company because I'm just not that interested in stones. But yeah, I really.
I know why. You just want to get away from your dad's.
The stones that there's one kind of stone that I like. But yeah.
I thought it was because you just wanted to get away from your dad's original, you know, founded business when he was working at Cooper Pedy. You just want to get away from that altogether.
I don't know how much success he had in Cooper Pedy. So, yes.
He certainly had more success with Supre.
Yes, he did indeed.
Oh, great. Well, that's awesome, Catherine. And if people want to actually find out more about Think and want to use your services, where could they go?
Sure. It's www.catherinetauk.com.au. And you can book in a complimentary 60-minute session with me on there. You can do that via the website or even just give me a call. All of my details are on the contact page on the website.
Sorry, Catherine, did you say .co.uk?
No, .com.au.
Oh, okay.
Did I say .co.uk?
I don't know. That's what I thought I heard. I must be hearing things.
.com.au.
So catherinetauk.com.au. Awesome stuff. That's great. Yep. Catherine, if people want to find out more about you, where could they go? Like any social media or just go to your website or was that the best place?
Yeah, the website. There's obviously also LinkedIn and I share a lot of my blog content on Facebook. So check that out, Catherine Tote Consulting Services on Facebook.
And what do you do? You give away free content on business?
I do. So any resources that are interesting, interesting articles or interesting resources like the Power Quadrant that I was talking about before, I'm constantly looking for new ways and new resources and new things to add value. So there's a whole lot of content on the blog as well.
Awesome. Catherine, you can't say just the Power Quadrant. You got to say the Power Quadrant.
The Power Quadrant. Sorry.
That's awesome, Catherine. You have been awesome and thank you very much for jumping on Big Fat Marketing. I really do appreciate your time. You have contributed a great deal of information, especially on branding. And I would look forward to having you on again. I always like to have not close the door on my guests, and I would love to have you on again another time. So I really appreciate your time.
Sounds good.
All right, Catherine, you take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.